Welcome. This is William Evans, and you're listening to Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Elizabeth Harrell. Welcome, Elizabeth. Thank you for speaking with us again.
Hi, Will. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. On your last program, you talked about your relationship with water.
Yes.
And at the end of that earlier conversation, you explained to us about your close encounter and communication with a gray whale.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did your communication with that whale influence who you are today?
Without a doubt.
And when the whale spoke to you, you trusted the message?
I inherently trusted it, but it's taken a lifetime for me to really figure out what the message meant. And sort of hidden codes behind it.
And you told me you're always listening to the natural world and have had earlier encounters and conversations with creatures when you were younger.
Yes.
What can you share with us?
I want to just sort of put it into a personal context, I suppose, in that they seem like random encounters, and each of us is responsible for our own interpretation of what happens to us. In these cases, they were such unique and powerful events that came with a message. And so part of the listening was listening for that message. And it's always been there. And it's each one of these encounters in my life, and I can just touch on a few, but each one contains a complete message. And, you know, I have the choice of not listening to that message and disregarding it, or taking it to heart and really putting a high value on it, because it's, you know, each one of these occurrences was completely unique in my life. They've never happened before, and they have not happened since. So, you know, I take them for something significant.
Right.
And to answer your question with the whale, each one has changed who I am today. Each one has taken me sort of step by step into myself more, my authentic self.
Yeah, maybe you're remembering who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
So
or who I can be.
Yes, yes. So tell us about an experience.
One of the first was a rattlesnake, and I grew up in the in the High Sierra Mountains, in the wild. I got there early in terms of the development of the area, and the wilds, the wilderness was my playground. And joy as a teenager was to go out and test ourselves. I grew up as a skier, so summer land training was a summer activity and it was vigorous, right? It wasn't easy. And we would run up mountains and run down mountains. And so that was what I grew up with. I was never the fastest. I was always keeping up, but it really became part of who I was at that time and my freedom. And so in this moment, I was with a group, I was on my own trajectory down the slope, and I was going as fast as I could within my capacity and my balance, jumping from rock to rock to log to rock. And in this one case, I was jumping from a big boulder to a log and then over to the next log. And in between the two logs, was a space, and it was a fair distance. And it was fairly shrubby, completely off trail. Manzanitas, white thorn, both of which are prickly. If you landed on them, you'd be gouged. And I, as I was jumping, you know, full momentum from the rock to the log to the next log, at some point my adrenaline spiked and I was alerted to a danger. And as soon as that, I mean, the alert to the danger came before the sound, but I heard just one, tss, one very quiet, subtle rattle of a rattlesnake tail. And we're not usually, we don't usually have rattlesnakes there. And so I really didn't have this fear of snakes at all. And it, this was a drought year. And so the rattlesnakes come up to high country, I learned, in dry years. And as I was flying through the air from one log to the next, I heard this in midair, and somehow my body took control and turned me 90 degrees and flung, you know, not really flung me, just directed me, catapulted me, maybe probably a good 5 feet, 90 degree angle from the trajectory that I was on. So somehow I turned my whole body and launched the other direction. When I landed, I turned around and I saw this snake, and it was quite big. It was probably at least 3.5 inches in diameter and coiled. So I had no idea how long it was, but a snake of that thickness is going to be an old big snake. And if it probably could have struck me where I stood, but it didn't. And granted, I caught it as it was sunbathing at the heat of the day. So it probably wasn't very active and it didn't know I was coming. I surprised it in its leisure. And so we just kind of stared at each other for a while and, got the very strong, clear message. And that's part of how this, communication happens, is that a thought, a complete thought kind of drops in my brain. And to me, it doesn't feel like I'm thinking it. It feels like I'm receiving it. And in that reception, the message was, stay vigilant, pay attention. Do not lose yourself in the any experience to the extent that you lose awareness of what's around you and what's happening.
Wow.
And you know, that seems like a fairly obvious message when you come across a rattlesnake in that fashion. but it happened to me at a very crucial time in my life when I was just about to launch into adulthood and go out on my own. And so it seemed like a powerful message that I could carry with me into my adult life.
And you listened.
And I listened. And I listened because I spent my childhood mostly listening to water, laying at the edge of my favorite creek in my favorite spot and just listening to water. And that's kept me. I mean, it's still, I don't have that great of memory. And things drop into holes, never to be found again. But these animal encounters are the most vivid memories, some of the most vivid memories of my life. So they've stuck with me, and I continue, as each time I tell the story, it's a new opportunity to look deeper into the codes that are contained in that message. I had another experience with a wolf and a mountain lion that were both similar experiences. And that was up in British Columbia, probably about 2 years later, maybe three. That was when I was 19. Yeah, so I was living on Cortez Island, which is in the Queen Charlotte Sound. It's in between Victoria Island and the mainland. And there are resident populations of both wolves and mountain lions. There's also a resident population of deer. So the, you know, how the wolves and mountain lions got onto this island, who knows, whether they swam or floated or I don't think they would have been introduced, but and the populations weren't big. You know, they were a few. There's probably one or two packs of wolves and maybe three, you know, who knows how many mountain lions. But I heard that they swam to the islands because the deer were there and it was fairly easy pickings. And during this time, I was on a fast. I had fasted. I was on a 7-day fast. My hair was very long. I had braided it and wrapped it. And the ceremony was, again, my own, it was my coming of age. I didn't, you know, growing up as a Anglo-American, raised on television and Walt Disney, I didn't have any coming of age ceremonies. So I gave it to myself. And this was a 7-day fast. And it was very ceremonial for me. Everything, I was very intentional with what I was doing. And for most of that time, I was sleeping outside. I had a sleeping pad and a sleeping bag, and I was sleeping actually in the garden that I had planted. And I was living with a group of people, a group of young people. And so we were sort of practicing regenerative living long before it became a fad. it's not a fad, it's a purpose. So anyway, one night, it was probably midway through my fast, I was sleeping outside and was asleep and woke up again to this tingly adrenaline alert system that's really what I've come to trust, is this, it's like a cognition, but it's a precognition, that something is up, like, and it's a very specific feeling inside of my body, and, that something out of the ordinary I need to pay attention to, an alert system. And I woke up out of a sound sleep to this feeling and was like, oh, what's happening? And heard a low, rumbly, grumbly sound that sounded to me like it was behind my head and kind of off to my left. And right away I knew it was an animal. It wasn't a dog, you know, it was something. And knowing that there were mountain lions on the island, that came to mind. And as soon as that came to mind, there was a yowl. Mountain lions have a very distinct sound to their cry. And it was a scream, really. And it wasn't so loud that, you know, I was scared for my life, but it was loud enough that I knew that it knew that I was there. And then it was gone. And, you know, I was very vulnerable there by myself, sleeping on the ground. And I have no doubt that if that mountain lion wanted me for dinner, it could have easily had me. But I greeted it. I greeted it as a totem. I greeted it as a messenger. I greeted it as a sacred being. And inside of myself, said hello and again, sort of open to the message. And that message was less clear. I think most of it was that I felt that it was greeting me and that I need not be afraid, that, you know, we're raised on stories that predators are always out to get us, you know, raised on Walt Disney. It's always the big, bad, you know, the big, bad wolf. And that really opened my heart to understanding that that encounters with animals of a wild nature can be relational and reciprocal, and that there's something to be gained from it. And fear, I think if I had alerted in fear or screamed or, you know, whatever, it might have been a different story, but I just laid there still and listened.
Well, and simply acknowledging another being.
Yeah.
Is huge. Yeah. This is Shifting Gears, and you're listening to a conversation with Elizabeth Harold about her listening to the natural world, as well as people concerned about source water.
So talking about, you know, a lifetime of learning with these encounters, during that time, I was really exposed a lot of the sort of messages that I was getting from the spiritual journey was that we are all one. It was really a journey into understanding oneness. And I wasn't raised that way. No one I knew was raised that way. And so it really was coming in as a spiritual teaching. And the books that came into my sphere, the people that I was meeting, and this oneness, this study in oneness really, and I think that's what I felt with that mountain lion, is an affinity, and that we were part of the natural world together. And that my feeling was, if it wanted me for lunch, I was ready to be its lunch, right? That I would be serving, it would be a good way to die, right? And just that sense of oneness really was being established in me at that time. And that sense of oneness has followed me into my understanding of water unity consciousness and how I've grown to establish a relationship with water that is deeper than is sort of known to be possible. And again, it doesn't matter whether I'm making it up or not. It leads me places and it teaches me things and it gives me vast amounts of energy and wisdom. And so I don't need it to be anything other than it is. And so this kind of leads me to the next encounter, which happened just a few days later. And I was finishing my fast. So I wanted to go to this rocky point, which overlooked a small little bay, a tidal bay. It would, you know, empty and fill twice a day in this remarkable tidal surge. And so it was very dramatic, and eagles and orcas. Sometimes you saw orcas come in, and so I had this favorite rocky point, and I went there to officially witness the end of my fast. And I was going to unbraid my hair and take the wraps out. And I was just skipping down, you know, I was singing. I'm sure I was singing. I sang a lot in those days. And not thinking of much else than where I was going and my purpose, trying to fully be present with what I was doing and my intention. And as I was just kind of traipsing along, suddenly it was like I hit a wall. I just stopped. And again, that alert feeling was in my body, and it really stopped me this time. And I looked down at my feet, and there was a fresh wolf scat that I had just about stepped on. And, you know, whether it was a slight smell or, you know, I'm not sure really what stopped me right there, other than, whoa, someone else is here, because it was so fresh. It was morning. It's a fern forest with big trees. And so everything was moist and steaming, and that was steaming as well. And I realized that it was that creature, that wolf. I mean, it was clearly a canine scat, not a feline scat. And I realized that wolf was probably watching me or was aware of me being there, whether it was actually watching me or not, but I had suddenly had that feeling that I was being watched. And I realized that I was in no more danger going on as I was going back. And so I decided to, again, really greet. And I think I even spoke out loud, if I remember right, or I certainly felt like I was speaking out loud, and just greeting the wolf as, you know, as my family, and honoring it and telling that I love it and how grateful I was to live in a place where a wolf could be. It was just this moment of, I'm in this wolf's home. And I kept going. I got to my rocky point. I sang my songs. I unwrapped my hair. I had the small pile of thread that I had wrapped my hair with in my hands. And I was intending to go back to where I was living and, you know, do something with it, burn it or bury it or, you know, something, just offer it to the fire, I think was what I was thinking. And I got up and I didn't see it when I had come in, but I because I should have, but I didn't. And I turned behind me and there a little bit above me on the ledge between the rock and the trees was a raccoon carcass. Again, steaming, fresh blood, opened up, saw all its insides. And I realized that I had interrupted my wolf friend's lunch. And so I put the wraps on or next to the carcass and a small, actually it was fairly large size crystal next to it and left and just said my prayers and again, thanked the wolf and left. And I came back a few days later and the carcass was gone. The wraps were gone, which I found, thought was very interesting. What, I mean, they probably blew away, but the crystal was still there. But right next to the crystal was a strip of fur. And it could have been raccoon fur, but it looked more to me like wolf fur. And it was like a scab. It was a thin strip of dried skin that was probably about an quarter of an inch wide and maybe 4 inches long with fur attached to it in a roach. You see that Native Americans have a roach that they wear in their hair. And it felt to me like a return blessing. And what that message really told me was not only are we one with the natural world, we can speak and listen, that we can have a reciprocal conversation with the natural world, that it's, and realizing that it's communicating with us all the time if we're listening and honoring it and caring for it and loving it. And so that was really the start of my very intentional relationship with the natural world. And it wasn't I've always had an affinity with water, but at that time in my life, it wasn't forefront in my understanding. I was still fully exploring and discovering things. And, you know, now I've come to what I call the water unity consciousness and recognizing that water comes first on Earth. Without liquid water, we would be Mars. A good portion of the water on Earth is older than the sun. So water came, and it may not have been fully H2O, but it was, you know, some water came to Earth. I also think Earth creates water through the magma and rocks melting. And, you know, I think that there's water being added to the earth because it's only like 50% of the water on earth that's older than the sun. But this is kind of the arc of my understanding of water as source, as essential source, it's not a resource. And that's one thing I really am working towards in my own sort of mission, is to just change that one word in our language, that water is not a resource, that water is source.
Well, we agree with you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, it's a very different relationship.
We think that's an important distinction as well. We're out of time. This has been lovely. Would it be accurate to say that your ability to listen to nature and water and creatures is also an ability that's important in your watershed wisdom councils?
Absolutely, it is. It's at the heart of it.
Well, would you speak with us again and next time tell us more about those councils?
It would be my pleasure, Will.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
This is William Evans. You've been listening to a conversation with Elizabeth Carroll. This is KDNK.